It's a business with 1.6 million employees in the U.S. alone. This year, 7.2 billion people will go to a Walmart store. Walmart does more business than Target, Sears, Kmart, JCPenney, Safeway, and Kroger combined. And more than half of all Americans live within 5 miles of a Walmart store. That's either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on who you ask. Charles Fishman is a senior editor at Fast Company, and he's the author of the new book, The Walmart Effect: How the World's Most Powerful Company Really Works and How It's Transforming the American Economy. He joins us from member station WHYY in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Charles Fishman, welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Charles, we have a lot of ground to cover. Let's begin, I guess, by defining our terms and your title. What is, to start with, the Walmart Effect?
The Walmart Effect is all the ways that Walmart changes our daily lives. And I argue in the book that Walmart actually touches the life of every American every day. There are the obvious ways Walmart reshapes shopping habits and shopping patterns. It reshapes communities. But Walmart also changes the kind of products that are sold, and obviously the prices at which they're sold, the variety of products, the quality of those products. It changes where those products are made, what country, literally, and under what circumstances they're made. And so Walmart really reaches deep into all kinds of corners of the economy, not just of the United States, but of the globe, and changes the way work is done and business is conducted. And I think it's really important, just because of Walmart's scale, to understand all the ways that Walmart shapes our economy and our daily life.
Very evocatively put. And I want us to paint a picture here and take an example, actually, you present in the book of paperboard box packaging for deodorants as just maybe one illustration of how Walmart is changing our world. Paint the picture.
Some of your listeners may be old enough to remember that deodorant, antiperspirant, used to come in a little cardboard box, a little paperboard box. You'd take your roll-on or your glass container or your solid out of the paperboard box and pitch the box in the garbage. And in the late 80s and early 90s, Walmart decided that the paperboard box was literally wasted resources. It actually took up 20% of the shelf space in the deodorant aisle. So you could get 20% more deodorant on the same shelves if you got rid of the box. And the container in which the deodorant came was hard plastic or metal or glass. It was already as strong as the paperboard box. And so Walmart asked antiperspirant makers to, as they put it, unbox the antiperspirant. And if you walk into a Walmart now, there are typically 500 containers of deodorant facing you, not counting the ones behind the ones facing you. Many shelves of deodorant, 8 shelves, 60 facings across, not one box. And in what's even more remarkable, if you walk into a Target or a CVS or a Walgreens or an Eckerd or a Rite Aid, those deodorant aisles too have not one box. Mm. So Walmart used its insight and its power to get rid of the cardboard box, which was literally wasted resource. You had to design it, cut down the trees to manufacture it, print it, pay somebody to put the deodorant in the box, and then you had to deal with the waste of a billion boxes a year, and it actually served no purpose. So that's an example of how Walmart changes the world of business and changes the economy in an almost universally positive way. Of course, if you were in the paperboard box making business, those years were bad years. But I think most people would agree that kind of packaging isn't necessary, and we should get rid of it if we can.
And I certainly didn't know that. And as you're pointing out, there are probably any number of products that we could talk about that have been fundamentally changed by Walmart, the largest retailer of those products. Actually, I want to ask you about one or two other examples just because I love the stories. What about Chilean salmon?
Well, Chilean salmon in many ways isn't quite as pretty a picture as the paperboard box. This is the flip side of the Walmart effect, where the power of Walmart changes the price and the perception of a product, but the consequences of that change are a little less visible. Walmart is the number one seller of salmon in America. The other top seller is Costco. It can be hard to figure out which one is number one and which one is number two, but several people told me Walmart is number one. They sell more salmon than any other retailer in America. All their salmon is North Atlantic salmon that comes from Chile, which is, of course, a country on the South Pacific. So all of that North Atlantic salmon is farm-raised. It's non-native to Chile. Chile is now the number one producer of salmon in the world. They raise and ship more salmon even than Norway and Canada. And salmon is not native at all to Chile. Walmart buys all of its salmon from Chile, and it buys one-third of the annual harvest of salmon from Chile. Walmart sells salmon in its grocery stores, in its supercenters, for $4.84 a pound. That price is what I think of as a showstopper price. It's almost unbelievable it's so low. Again, those people in your audience who are older than 30 remember when salmon cost $16 for a quarter of a pound of salmon. Less than $5 for a full pound of salmon. How does Walmart do it? Part of how they do it, of course, is focused purchasing, buying all your salmon from one place, telling people what you're going to buy so it's predictable. But the other aspect of how salmon is produced is the cost of raising the salmon and treating the people who process it in a civilized fashion isn't in the $4.84 a pound. The salmon live in huge, open-topped ocean pens. Their feed and their poop simply drop to the bottom of the ocean beneath them, and there they create this toxic layer of sludge. And the cost of cleaning up from the salmon farms isn't in the $4.84. The people who process the salmon work in what are very clean processing facilities, but they work long hours in what amount to very, very demanding factory conditions with sharp implements and none of the safety rules that we would impose in this country. And so the salmon is produced in a way that goes against 100 years of agreement in this country about what impact products should be allowed to have on the environment and what impact they should have on the people who handle them. And so it's cheap, but if we could see a video of how it was raised and how the people who handled it were treated, would we still be comfortable feeding it to our family? That's the question that I try and raise in the book.
And so you have a fairly fully featured vision of this. I mean, you see some benefits and you see some drawbacks. I don't want to tilt our interview too much too early on, but do you end up concluding for our listeners, do you end up concluding that Walmart is a net positive, a net negative, or you do not have an opinion?
I think it's important to acknowledge the good that Walmart does in order for the criticisms and the negatives to have a little more impact. The most important thing Walmart does, there are really two important things Walmart does. If you're living on modest means, if you're living on $500 or $600 a week, you're a single mom with two kids, if Walmart comes into your town and starts selling groceries, as an example, Walmart typically drops the price of groceries in a town where it does business 15%. That's not for some kind of generic box of cornflakes. That's for the regular milk and cornflakes and hot dogs and bread that you would typically buy, brand name merchandise, 15% cheaper. What that means is for that single mom with a 13-year-old boy and an 11-year-old boy who are hungry, Walmart is giving them 7 free weeks of groceries a year. Why wouldn't you shop at Walmart under those circumstances? That's fabulous. And those savings cascade across all kinds of product categories. And of course, competitors end up lowering their prices in order not to lose business to Walmart. That's the good, and I think it's really important to understand that and acknowledge it. And the second thing that Walmart does so well is impose efficiencies on the supply chain. The deodorant box, the antiperspirant box, is a perfect example. That even saved fuel, because you add up all those deodorant boxes, you got to move from one part of the country to another. The weight actually equals truck fuel. The negative things that Walmart does have to do with their unrelenting focus on price and their scale. They end up driving jobs out of the United States because eventually there's no more efficiencies to be wrung out. And if you're going to continue to reduce the cost of things, you have to make them in cheaper arenas. Then they end up made in ways that we might not find acceptable in this country. Many of the manufactured goods that we take for granted on the shelves at Walmart, clothes, small appliances, tools, they are made in factories now overseas that would be illegal if you could wiggle your nose like Samantha and move that factory to North Carolina or Michigan or Ohio. So the merchandise sort of looks the same and it comes to us at the same price or cheaper all the time, and yet it's now made in a way that if it were made here, it would be illegal. And I think the global economy has sort of allowed us to not notice that that's happening. And I think that if customers understood what was required to deliver these kinds of low prices, they might not find the deal acceptable. I'm a journalist, so it's not my job to tell you how to think about that. It's my job to answer the questions, to follow the consequences as far as they go, and then to lay it out and let your listeners and the readers of the book decide how comfortable they are with that process.
Were I a betting man, and I guess as an investor in a sense I am, I would bet that so-called globalization will only continue further. I would expect, and my money's probably down on the table, that the trends that you're describing will play out more. And I hope, for the world's sake, they play out better than you're describing in some of the examples you're giving. So I'm going to take it that, Charles, you agree with me that globalization is going to happen more so already than it has. Do you agree with that?
I certainly do. Something dramatic would have to change to shift the global economic currents away from the migration of manufacturing and so forth to cheaper and cheaper locations all the time. So that, I think we can go with that.
And we're going to pause it right there. When we return, we're going to continue to talk Walmart with Charles Fishman, author of The Walmart Effect. You're listening to The Motley Fool Radio Show. This is The Motley Fool Radio Show with David Gardner, and we're talking about Walmart with Charles Fishman, the author of the book, The Walmart Effect, How the World's Most Powerful Company Really Works, and How It's Transforming the American Economy. And in a sense, what underlies the word globalization is the word trade, that there will be more and more trade and exchange, whether it's labor or products and supplies, from one country to another. And so I guess my natural next question is, do you think that Walmart will be a successful and happy player within that continuing trend? Or do you believe that Walmart has simply gotten too big, perhaps in some ways too rotten, or at least some of the examples you're giving, to really succeed as not only greater trade happens, but greater exposure and greater awareness happens?
I don't think Walmart's going to fail. I think Walmart is an economic force that's going to continue in the United States. The power of Walmart's not going to grow dramatically in the U.S. from what it is now, which is already dramatic, just because they own so much of the U.S. retail market already. But across the globe, Walmart is a relatively small player in huge markets like China, where there's only 45 stores, India, where there are currently no stores. I think that Walmart could be a very powerful force for good in the trade conversation and in the globalization conversation if it started to impose standards on its suppliers and enforce them. Walmart does have a code of conduct for factory suppliers now, and it issues a report on its own performance every year. But if you read the report very carefully, you see that Walmart's factories don't actually take the code of conduct very seriously. 92% of Walmart's factory inspections in the last year they reported were announced. They were by appointment. And of those inspections that were announced, Walmart itself found serious violations in its own in the factories that it used for its own merchandise in announced inspections in more than 60% of the cases. So that's how seriously those factory managers are taking Walmart's code of conduct. It's on the wall in the factory. They have to sign it. Walmart tells them they're coming to do a factory inspection on a particular day, and in more than 60% of those factories, there are serious violations. What are those factories like the other 364 days a year? But Walmart has shown how powerful a force it can be for imposing new requirements for timeliness of delivery, efficiency of the delivery system, the packaging of products, the way products are made. If it decided to impose those same kind of standards and enforce them vigorously for things like how factory workers are treated or what the environmental impact of the way those products are made is, Walmart could actually begin a beneficial upward spiral that I think would also – it wouldn't only benefit the communities in which those products are made and us as consumers. It would actually change the public perception of Walmart.
Mm. In your book, you also write about people who said no to Walmart. Tell us the story of Jim Ware and Snapper Mowers.
this is a really interesting case because one of the most amazing impacts of Walmart is that Walmart gets inside our brains and changes our perception of what things should cost and what the value of things is. Jim Weir was the CEO of a lawnmower company called Snapper. Snapper is a fairly high-end, high-quality lawnmower. Most of those were sold through independent lawnmower dealers at outdoor equipment shops of the sort people are pretty familiar with. But 20% of the lawnmowers were sold through Walmart. And in its classic fashion, Walmart put relentless pressure on the price. The cheapest Snapper lawnmower was $299. That's very high for Walmart. Walmart actually sells five lawnmowers with engines in them for less than $200. And Walmart's entry-level lawnmower is $99. So what Jim Weir was concerned about was every year Walmart wanted a price reduction. They wanted Snapper to find a way of reducing the price. That would eventually lead to reducing the quality. Walmart wanted Snapper on its shelves in its stores because Snapper's a high-quality brand. They wanted to offer their customers a high-quality brand, but at the same time, they wanted it to get less and less expensive all the time. And what Jim Weir did was look down the road 5 years and 8 years and say, what Walmart's going to do is undermine the very qualities that they wanted us in the stores for. They're going to undermine our relationship with the dealers who do 80% of our business because they're going to be competing by selling much more expensive Snapper products that aren't the same quality. And Jim Weir decided that doing business with Walmart long-term was going to destroy the values that Snapper was built on and might well completely destroy the company. And so he went, he had made this decision along with his, you know, with his colleagues, the managers of Snapper, and he went to Bentonville to tell the Walmart managers that Snapper was going to pull its products from Walmart. And he was ushered into the office of a senior vice president of Walmart, the person in charge of outdoor products, billions and billions of dollars a year in business. And that vice president's office was actually furnished with cast-off lawn furniture, a folding chair and a chaise lounge. Jim Weir, the CEO of Snapper, sat on the chaise lounge in his suit to pull his business from Walmart. Walmart doesn't waste money on office furnishings. They are frugal, even in the home office, even in the headquarters. And Walmart actually did the things that they're known for. They said to Jim Weir, why don't you just come up with a whole separate line of products that are less expensive, lower quality, less expensive, that we can sell at Walmart? That way we won't really be competing with your higher-end business. Why don't you move your factory from McDonough, Georgia, to an overseas location where you could make these products more cheaply? And Jim Weir, to his credit, had decided what course he was going to take. He knew they were going to suggest those things. And I think it was a difficult conversation, but a gracious conversation. But he decided to protect his business by trying to do business without Walmart.
And can you finish the story, at least in the near term? How has it worked out for Jim Weir?
Jim Weir said that they very quickly picked up the 20% of business that they gave up by pulling out of Walmart because of their independent dealer channel was so happy not to have to compete with Walmart. The other thing that's interesting, though, is that I was allowed to tour the Snapper factory in McDonough, Georgia. So Snapper no longer does any business with Walmart, but that Snapper factory lives in a kind of relentless effort at increasing efficiency and decreasing costs because even though they don't do business with Walmart, they live in what I call the Walmart ecosystem. They have to keep their lawnmowers competitively priced so that people don't look at the $99 Walmart lawnmower and the entry-level Snapper lawnmower at $299 and say, what could that $299 lawnmower possibly offer? So they literally measure the productivity of every factory worker in the McDonough factory every hour, and those figures are posted on the factory bulletin boards so everyone can see how everyone is doing. And that kind of effort to maintain your efficiency, that sort of lack of complacency, is really remarkable, and it's a function of Walmart's influence even on companies that are trying to do business without doing business with Walmart.
What do you think it would take for a majority of Walmart customers to stop shopping at Walmart?
I don't think that's likely to happen in any sort of dramatic way. 100 million Americans shop at Walmart each week, according to Walmart's figures. That is one half the adult population of the nation. And so those 100 million people have voted with, they vote with their wallets every week. And that 100 million figure, Walmart's growth in the United States, is not much changed over the last 5 years relative to population growth. And so all of the noisy debate about Walmart at the moment may be changing people's perceptions of Walmart, but it isn't changing their behavior. I think, I mean, part of what I wanted to do by writing a book that really got behind the curtain at Walmart, Walmart's an extremely secretive company, is to change the conversation, is to show people what the cost of the low prices is directly. And maybe that helps people ask something of Walmart that they're not doing now. I think you're more likely to change Walmart's behavior by changing shopping habits a little bit than you are to instantly reshape the shopping habits of 50 million Americans.
One of Walmart's major competitors is Costco. Costco today has about one-fifth of the sales that Walmart is generating. But it isn't too long before you start adding up Costco and Target and then start throwing in Amazon.com and business done on eBay and others that you start seeing, you know, there are some other pretty big players out there that if you take them together are actually bigger than Walmart. But these are big companies. I'm wondering if the criticisms that you level at Walmart would be equally true of Costco. In other words, are you criticizing a system of really big, powerful retailers, or are there specific things about Walmart that you single out and flag and say, I'm writing my book about Walmart, not Costco, for some good reasons?
I would say the second. I'm writing about Walmart because Walmart is this unprecedented scale of economic power and has this unprecedented impact. And Walmart's business model is very specific. Costco, for instance, is known for paying good wages, having good benefits, and having much lower turnover. I would argue that they're not perfect competitors. Costco's a warehouse club store. The typical Costco only stocks 4,000 items. The typical Walmart store, not a supercenter, stocks 60,000 items. That's a completely different kind of business. But I would not single out Walmart for instance, this initial wave of requiring a new level of information about companies' impact. I think a company like Southwest or United or American that dominates airline markets, a company like Target, which is only small relative to Walmart, there's no sense in which Target is the friendly little neighborhood market. You know, Target is a huge national retailer as well. I think we need to understand the impact that all of these retailers are having on the way our society operates. And of course they will howl about releasing information. But in fact, we regulate all kinds of industries quite closely and often for everyone's benefit.
Let's talk stock. Shares of Walmart are actually down over the last 12 months. They've lost to the S&P 500 over the last 1, 2, and 5 year periods. What do you think is behind Walmart's sluggish stock performance? And would you expect that this is a stock that will beat the market ever again? Or is it just kind of too big to really exceed market average?
Well, they've not only lost to the S&P in the last 5 years, I think Walmart is either flat or down compared to 5 years ago. So Walmart stock has not been a good investment in the last 5 years. I'm not in the investment business or the stock recommending business. It's very clear, everything else aside, that a company that has been the number one company in the world in sales and is number two, will be number two this coming year only because of the dramatic increase in oil prices, which is pushing ExxonMobil from the number two slot to the number one slot. It's very clear that doubling the profits and doubling the sales and doubling the profits and doubling the share price of a company like that gets harder and harder. If Walmart's going to double in size in the next 5 years, it's going to have to add again the largest company in human history. So that's quite a daunting challenge. That's what they've set themselves out for. So everything else aside, Walmart is an investment that you would step into carefully just because the challenges of growth for a company of this scale are tremendous. And without growth, it's going to be hard for the stock price to move dramatically. But it's certainly true that stranger things have happened. Mm.
to close, Charles Fishman, you write that when you go into Walmart, you are both amazed and appalled. After researching and writing your book, after looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly, do you still shop at Walmart?
For the time being, I shop at Walmart. We shop very strategically at Walmart. I shop at Walmart for the moment because I'm going to spend, I think, the next 6 months talking about Walmart, and I really feel like it's important to stay connected to what is so appealing about Walmart, why do people shop there, and to understand how Walmart changes. Walmart changes very quickly, and I feel like I need to visit the stores once or twice a month just to see what's going on if I'm going to talk intelligently about the company. Mm-hmm. We tend in our family only to buy what we call consumables at Walmart. We buy paper towels there. We buy soap, bath soap, cleaning products of all kinds, things like laundry detergent, stuff that's gone the next time we go there. One thing I did in the course of researching the book that didn't make it into the book, unfortunately, is I actually took two sets of routine purchases from Walmart up to my office, and before I would release them to the household, I actually found out where every one of those products was made. Most of the consumables are actually still made in America. There are, 40 or 50 Lay's potato chip factories in America. Bath oil, soap, toilet paper, paper towels. Most of that stuff is still made in American factories. So I'm not uncomfortable buying it there, especially in the short term. We've long since stopped buying things like clothing and small appliances at Walmart. There's a woman in the book who sewed jeans for Walmart for several years at a factory in Bangladesh. And she tells the story publicly and also in an unusual lawsuit she's part of against Walmart of being beaten with the jeans she was sewing if she didn't produce 120 pairs of jeans an hour, if she didn't sew the back pocket on at the pace of 120 pairs an hour. I'm pretty sure that the factory manager didn't set aside the jeans he used to beat his factory workers and not send them to America. I think if this woman's story is true and Walmart has not contradicted it, there are people in the United States who bought clothing that was used to beat the people who made it. And I think that kind of behavior, even in the global economy, even far away from America, it really makes those products unacceptable. That's the sense in which I mean, if you could see a video of how the product was made, would you still be comfortable using it? And I think we need to try and take account of that. Mm.
The book is The Walmart Effect, How the World's Most Powerful Company Really Works and How It's Transforming the American Economy. It says in the marketing copy for this book, Charles, that when you wrote this cover story for Fast Company magazine, it generated the strongest reader response in the history of the magazine. Is the book available, by the way, at Walmart?
That's a good question. The book is for sale on Walmart's website. You talked a lot about e-commerce. It's at walmart.com. I think that's an artifact of the fact that Walmart uses a distributor to populate its website with books, and I don't think anybody was paying particular attention. For the moment, it's not in stores. Walmart, of course, doesn't sell that many different titles. It sells a lot of books, but not a big range. I think if the book becomes a big seller, Walmart might consider selling it because Walmart likes nothing better than a fast-moving product.
Charles Fishman, thank you for sharing your perspective on Walmart and informing us, and thank you for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.